The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice fills the air. Talking about the state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of bells. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa and my partner, Wynn Carpenter.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
We're here with our producer, Christina. How are you?
Very good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Well, that's good.
Good.
Looks like we're all doing well this morning. We're broadcasting live from downtown Reading at KCNR Studio, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better. And we're podcasting, I think.
Yep.
We are.
Yep.
And broadcasting live on KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. And we archive forever and ever.
And ever and ever and ever.
And ever. So you can go back and hear this program. We have a guest with us, supervisor from District 5, Chris Kellstrom. And Chris, we want to start this show off. We lost one of our heroes.
Yes, we did.
Jim Gibson, and I know that you wanted to say a few things about that. And we will all miss him. He was truly a hero, truly a great man.
Yep. Commander Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Submarine commander, patriot, great guy. Yeah, he was fantastic. Mary Lou, breaks my heart. It was pretty sad. They've been together a long time.
Long time.
Yeah, so heart goes out to the family.
Amen.
Yep.
You know, and what a great guy he was. I know at the tea parties, he showed up at just about every meeting and would always remind me to get a couple of bucks from everybody so we can pay for the venue. And just a great man and had a heart of gold. I mean, the one thing about Jim that strikes me is just what a nice person he was.
Yeah.
He was just, I mean, man, what a wonderful guy. And I know when the World War II Memorial was put together back in Washington, D.C., Doug LaMalfa, our congressman, was his valet,
mm-hmm.
which is quite an honor.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. I mean, could you, how would it be to just look at a congressman and say, hey, man, get me a sandwich? You
know? Yeah. Doug made it to the funeral. There was quite an attendance there. It was, you know, and Jim, Commander, was, I wouldn't say a man of few words, but he wasn't exactly a chatterbox. But when he spoke, you listened because there was always wisdom in whatever he said.
Very commendable.
I mean, absolutely, 100%. So
we're here with Chris, and there's a lot of things we want to touch on today. If you have a question or a comment, the phone number is 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. So, Chris, I guess the big news is the sheriff is going to unveil a plan on finally getting the jail floor open that was closed. And if I recall correctly, I think he closed that without letting the supervisors know. But anyway, there is some news on that, and I'd like you to tell the folks what you can about this plan coming up and what it is we're going to do. I think the jail is our priority, and, of course, opening up that floor definitely is a priority. So you got the floor, buddy.
Yeah, the jail is the number one priority for, I mean, I can't speak for the rest of the supervisors, but I can pretty much say for all the supervisors, I mean, it's the number one priority, you know, for the citizens of Shasta County. I believe I think the sheriff now understands or knows it's the number one priority all the way around. So, you know, my plan, I'll just go with my plan first. My plan has been, even before I was seated, I had learned about the SSOs or public service officers that are within the jail that used to be a dozen of them, you know, a couple dozen of them, and now there is one. When I won my election and I met with the sheriff and found out there was one.
That was around 6 months ago.
That was clear back in December, so it was like 8 months ago. Yeah, and there was one public service officer. And so my suggestion was, well, if you can't hire enough jail guards, correctional officers, then maybe you ought to get some public service officers in there, which will take over some of the duties that the jail guards are now doing. That, you know, they're overqualified to do, for instance. So a public service officer can answer the phones, they can work the control boards, you know, opening doors in the jail. They just can't have direct contact with the inmates, and that's really the only difference. But all the other mundane tasks they can do. So that was my suggestion. You know, for some reason it wasn't really...
What kind of response did you get?
You know, it wasn't a good response at first. In fact, somebody went behind my back and said I didn't know what I was talking about and it wouldn't work. So during a board meeting, the undersheriff, Brian Jackson, was there, and, you know, great guy, love him. And I went ahead and addressed him during the board meeting, and I said, hey, I want to make sure that I'm clear here because, you know, you guys answered all my questions and my concerns when I was in the meeting with you. I said, but yet somebody in there went back out and said I didn't know what I was talking about, so I want to make sure I do know what I'm talking about, and let me verify this. So I verified everything that I'd said in the meeting, and he verified in open session that, yep, all that, they can do all that stuff. Okay. So then it was like, well, okay, maybe we'll give this a shot. So I got 6 positions funded immediately, and then I had 6 positions in the new budget. So, you know, and when Brian Jackson was at the board floor, he said that we now had 2. You know, I said, well, we've doubled our numbers. We had 1, and now we have 2. Wow. So, I mean, I wish that we'd had 6, and now we have 12, but hey, it's a start. So I had 6 positions funded immediately, and I had 6 more positions funded in the new budget. But then it was asked, hey, can you limit the exposure on the general fund in your $38 million jail budget? And of all the things that could be cut or you know, moved, the 6 new positions that I'd gotten funded in the budget were taken out of there. So it's a little frustrating for me because it's like believe me, my number one concern is getting that jail open. I mean, the number one, and I'm not the sheriff. I don't run the jail. I even at one point suggested to the chairman that, hey, maybe we should just have like a temporary job agency, so to speak, in Shasta County. Maybe we should hire a bunch of people off the street, get them through background, get them through all this stuff, get them on the books, get them through HR, and then say, hey, we got these employees right here. Would you use them in the jail? Would you do something with them, you know? And I was told, no, you're kind of stepping on some toes there. So now fast forward 8 months, and here we are, and it's obviously the same concern, the same number one priority is that jail. So we had a meeting, and basically one of the ideas from a supervisor was, let's pull officers off the streets right. And put them in the jail and get that thing open. Right. We need to do this immediately. And my point during the meeting was, you know, right now the officers on the streets, it doesn't do any good, no matter how many you have out there. If there's no place to put the criminals, then, you know, we're wasting our time. And the officers on the streets obviously are got to be very extremely frustrated because they're seeing the same people over and over and over. And I mean, the city of Anderson is fed up. The city Shasta Lake's fed up. City of Redding's getting fed up because there's no place to put these people. So that idea, even though I sound like a good idea to me, that idea was kind of said, well, there will be some officers that are pulled off the street and put in the jail, and that's not what they want to do, and it'll be a morale issue, and they won't be happy, and you may end up losing some officers and some sheriff's deputies that are forced to go into the jail. So I believe, and I don't want to steal his thunder, but the sheriff's idea now is there's some counties that have a mixture of correctional guards and sheriff's deputies.
Right.
If we ran the entire jail with sheriff's deputies, it would cost probably about $7 million. Extra. So if we have some sheriff's deputies and some correctional officers and some public service officers or SSOs, then the exposure will be about $1.5 million extra, which at this point it's just like, get the jail open, get the floor back open, get some of these guys off the street that are habitual criminals. So I think Tuesday, and again, I don't want to steal his thunder, but I think the sheriff is going to come with us Tuesday with an idea of there's some other counties that do the same thing where it's kind of a hybrid sheriff's deputies along with the correctional officers. And, you know, part of the problem to this whole thing is we're talking 3 different unions. So right. The SSOs have one union, the right. correctional guards have another union, and then the sheriff's deputies have another union. So now you mix them all into the jail, now you got 3 different unions. You know, if a sheriff's deputy does this, is that in, you know, part of the MOU of the correctional guard? I mean, so that there's a lot of underlying issues that are problems with the thing, but I think everybody's on the same page. Number one priority, get that other floor of the jail open.
Yeah, I know that they used to have, when new deputies would be hired, 2 days a week, they would go in on a rotation and they'd handle those duties along with, as you said, people who normally work at the jail. I think it's brilliant that you have the other folks come in and answer the phone and do those kinds of things. I mean, you know, that question of those mundane tasks, that would also add to the stress and the time that we'd have to pay correctional officers. So I think that's a great idea. And you're talking about not stealing the thunder of the sheriff. Well, there's a lot of people who are listening to this program that won't ever hear the sheriff. So I'd like you to tell us as much as you feel comfortable with telling us.
Right. Well, and I think, like I say, I think his idea or what is going to be is being proposed now or will be proposed Tuesday is let's get some sheriff's deputies, hire sheriff's deputies for the jail. And that's the difference right now. If we were to pull the sheriff's deputies we have off the street, right. They want to be street deputies, that's their job. That's what they went to the training for. That's what they went to the academy for. That's what they want to do. That's their career. If we were to just force them off the street into the jail right now, there may be some, you know, morale issues there where they're not, you know, real happy about that, which is understandable. So yeah, back in the day, historically, the way it used to work is to get into law enforcement, you had to get your foot in the door, and often, most times, you started at the jail because that was your foot in the door. Sure. You get in the jail. But that, again, that changed with the two different unions.
Yeah.
You know, now the correctional guards. So the deputies used to be trained, you know, for jail. And the great is great because back in, you know, even the late 80s, early 90s, if you had a situation like we have today, the officers on the street had already been trained in the jail. So you could pull half a dozen of them off the street, put them in the jail, get the floor back open. Those things change. And again, unions changed a lot of it where now you have two different unions. They're not cross-trained anymore. You go to the academy if you want to be a sheriff's deputy, and you go to the training for correctional guard if you want to be a correctional guard. And most of our deputies now out on the street, unless they've been here senior for quite some time, they're not trained for the jail. So you can't just pull them off there without any training, throw them in the jail. So,
well, what about there's been chatter about APD and RPD being approached about using their officers in the jail. None of them contracted with APD or RPD. None of those officers contracted with them to work in the jail.
Right.
They don't have any training for working in the jail. And they would pull them off of those locations, say Anderson. They pull them out of Anderson where they're already bringing them from Anderson, drop them at the jail. And I know from personal experience from people that I know that are in law enforcement that the guy is out walking before they even leave from doing the paperwork and getting them booked.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody's very frustrated. Yeah, I was in Alaska when they had the meeting, and Mike Gallagher and Jeff Keyser came to you know, the, and I guess the city manager from
Mike Gallagher is from city
from Anderson. Yeah, so Anderson, and I talked to them previously. I talked to them a few months ago, and I mean they were fed up back then. They're like, we need to get this jail open. It's my number one concern. I understand. I mean, I'm not the sheriff. You know, I'm doing everything I possibly can. I'm putting out ideas. I'm getting positions funded. I'm doing everything I can, but I'm not the guy that runs the jail. You know, so they were frustrated months ago. They're still even more frustrated now. So they finally, it was like, and I talked to Mike, and he's like, we're going to continue to do this. I said, Mike, I fully support you. I'm with you. We're
Mike
all
being the sheriff.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Mike Gallagher, the mayor of Anderson.
Oh, Mike Gallagher.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So. So, you know, everybody's fed up and frustrated as well they should be. But I think, Sheriff Johnson now is like, he's at the same point with everybody else is like, whatever we have to do. So right now, I think, we may pull some officers from Anderson or Redding if we need to get that jail open. If, you know, maybe a voluntary basis, maybe it's an overtime type of situation where if the officers volunteer, because again, it's not in their, job description. You know, so you can't just pull them off the street and say you're working in the jail tomorrow because, you know, the unions again.
And the training. They haven't been trained to work there.
True, true. But, of course, they can go in there and do the public service officers, you know, duties. So
answer phones to do the paperwork.
Absolutely. So, they you know, so, yeah, you're going to have, you know, that's what we're looking at now. We're looking at like a hybrid situation where we're going to have three different classifications of people. So you're going to have deputies, you're going to have correctional guards, and you're going to have SSOs or public service officers.
You know, on the public service officer front, there's a lot of retired law enforcement. And I think that we can hire them. And I think we're allowed something like, is it 900 hours?
Probably under 1,000 hours, yeah.
Under 1,000 hours.
So it doesn't affect their retirement.
So if you have several of them, and they'd probably, I mean, you know, it'd be the same money,
yeah.
I would think. And there's a lot of them that are retired, and I know that we wanted to do that as far as getting some help with RPD at one point, but there was that issue of there's only so many hours that you can hire them to do that, then you're done. Now, I don't know whether it's under 1,000 hours for everybody or per employee. I don't know, but I don't know if anybody looked into that.
Oh, good question.
Yeah, and there's been quite a retention problem has been the main issue. I mean, the sheriff has been recruiting and, you know, bringing in people, getting them hired, but then people are quitting as fast as he can hire them.
And
so
that really is the environment of the place from what I understand, from what he said.
And a normal shift for a correctional guard is they work 3 days, three 12-hour shifts on, and then 4 days off, and then four 12-hour shifts on, and then 3 days off. So, you know, they work basically 3 or 4 days a week. That's their normal no overtime, you know, situation. So, you know, you have a long week at 4 days and you have a short week at 3 days and, you know, but now since they're so short staffed, I mean, some of these guys are working 6 days a week, 12 hour shifts. I mean,
that's brutal.
Oh, and it burns you out pretty darn quick, you know, and
even in a soft job.
100%. And some of them, you know, half of them are on night shifts. So, I mean, you're working six nights in a row, you know, you got one day off. I mean, it doesn't take much. And then there was a few, human resource issues, I should say, in the jail, where there was I was approached by a gal, sent me an email, and I talked to her on the phone, and she ended up saying, now this was several months ago, but she said, you know, there's a couple problems there where, in her mind, she says, she would rather forego a raise, if you could get rid of a couple problems. So,
I'm guessing their problems mean human beings.
Yeah, and apparently that's been taken care of and remedied. So, you know, hopefully the morale. And that's the first thing I always ask them when I talk to the sheriff or when I talk to Captain Stonehouse. It's like, how's the morale? How's the attitudes? How's the morale? Because that seems to be a huge issue there, which we were told last week that that's been solved and remedied. So hopefully that's the case. And, you know, we can get some people in there and get that thing back open, because we got to get some, you know, there's got to be consequences to some of these actions and, you know, these habitual criminals that are just turned loose over and over and over again.
Well, the thing is, too, that goes back to the direct responsibility of who's not getting it done, because then you're victimizing, truly, who is responsible and not getting it done is victimizing our citizenry.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's happening. So if you get victimized, you get theft occurs with you, with your car or property, whatever, you're the victim. And who did that? The person in charge of not getting this stuff done. That's exactly who needs to be held accountable.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to kick, scream, and squeal about getting that done.
Yeah, and it's getting done. So I think I'm hoping that within, you know, hopefully by the end of the month, we have that other floor open. You know, because quite frankly, I mean, as you well know, officers on the streets, they have got to be just frustrated as can be. I mean, my goodness, you go to do your job, you know, have to wrestle and fight somebody to get them in cuffs and get them in the car, and then, you know, and they've got
10 minutes later.
Yeah, and you take them down there, and while you're still filling out the report, they're walking out down the street. I mean, that's got to be frustrating as can be. Oh, my gosh. So.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Those folks that are in law enforcement are putting themselves on the line, and they took an oath to do that.
Yeah.
And they trained to do that. So they're out there doing that job, but when it's being perpetuated, again, by the person making the decisions and not getting the job done, it's their fault. No matter what, they have to be held accountable. They're accountable to that. So what do you have to do? Think outside the box. Do something different. If plan A, B, C, and D don't work, keep on going until you find something that works. Open up and talk to the people. Find out what really needs to happen.
Yeah.
And we don't really see any of that going on.
Yeah, we had a little meeting out in Happy Valley, and I don't remember. I think it was a citizens patrol meeting. You know, so I said I'd be out there, and I mean, they bombarded me, and fortunately, and thank you very much. I had a couple sheriff's deputies that showed up there too, so they took a lot of the heat, and they answered a lot of questions, and I mean, they kind of, you know, but the people are fed up, and I understand it. I mean, they're sitting there going, hey, you know, they broke into my container. I know who did it. They stole all this stuff. And nobody comes out and nobody does anything. What am I supposed to do? And I'm, you know, I don't know what to tell them. I'm like, we got to get the jail open. I mean, there's no consequences. And people will be like, oh, we'll put up game cameras. And I'm like, well, game cameras are great. You might find out who ripped you off and broke into your property, but, you know, it's not going to open the jail. So now you know who broke into your stuff, but they're still going to be walking on down the street the next day.
Hell, they'll probably steal the damn game camera.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, everybody's frustrated and understandably so. I mean, and I get it. And I've been frustrated well before I decided to run. I was frustrated.
Sure.
So,
right.
you know, and things had gotten better, you know, prior to last year. They were getting a little better. We had room, and there was people, there was consequences. There was people that were being locked up. And then once we closed that floor of the jail, you know, you turned 100 people loose out on the street, and you have no place to put them. So I think it's a number. Everybody's on the same page. It's your number one priority, and the sheriff is taking it very seriously, and he's going to bring his plan to the board on Tuesday, and I can't see why anybody would be against what he wants to do, because we all want that jail open ourselves.
Well, there's a new assembly bill that's going to be in front of the Senate this coming Wednesday, and I know that I talked to a business owner, and they're getting, so far he's enlisted 500 people to go. What this bill is going to say is that if you own a small business, probably more in this particular person, his concern is owning convenience stores, and if you own a small business and somebody comes in and steals stuff from you, you can't stop them. You can't confront them. You can't do anything. The only protection you would have is if you hired an outside security force. You hire security guards to do it. And this business owner made a good point. He goes, you know, I've got like 20 stores. I would have to hire one for each store for convenience stores to stop the theft, because they can take up to, what,
$950
out. So this is a brand new law. California just is the gift that keeps on giving. And that's going to even make it harder, because I know our guys here in this town, the police, Anderson, the sheriffs in Shasta Lake City, and the sheriff's department, they're going to want to get convict these guys. You know, you get your business, people come in there, they take their stuff. You can't stop them, even as a clerk or even as a store manager, or frankly, even as an owner, but a security guard can. And it's just, you know, more money they have to spend and more businesses that'll be leaving California. So that one is on Wednesday.
That's almost like done by design, isn't it?
Yes, it is done by design. AB 953. So in lieu of that, I think the jail, you're right. You're so right about all that stuff.
I have a quick question, though, first, before we go on. What about using other county personnel that are trained in jails? Do they, when they have a day off, if we could get one or two to come up, you know, from Butte, from, you know, all over, all the counties around. Is there any way of doing that, a partnership?
So my understanding is most of the counties are all in the same boat. It's so hard to hire people that everybody, there's not a lot of extra help out there at all. So there's, you know, I mean, definitely I'll talk to the sheriff about it. It's not a bad idea. But I don't think, like, there's any counties that have an excess of jail guards.
There's not enough bodies.
Right. Okay. I mean, and that's, you know, he's, and like he said, I mean, and people poach his candidates all the time. I mean, he has, you know, sheriff's deputies that all of a sudden are working at the marshal's office because, you know, or they're going to this city or that, whatever. And it happens all the time. So.
How would we cover liability on that, though? I mean, you bring somebody up from another county.
Well, you'd have a contract, get an MOU or something.
Yeah. And that would cover the liability.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, there's always a way to do something.
But it would have to be done directly with sheriff to sheriff.
Right.
It couldn't be done employee to sheriff. It couldn't be somebody in Tehama County that says, hey, gee whiz, I want to do this.
Right.
I really want to do this. And the sheriff's saying, I need you here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the liability thing would have to be something they both sign off on an MOU. So,
yeah.
So that's a tough one.
Yeah, we've even thought about, you know, I mean, we have, you know, Shasta County has 2,300 employees that work for the county, you know, mm-hmm. so these SSO positions, they're non-sworn, they don't have to go to the correctional guard school or anything else, so it's like, we have 2,300 employees, you know, can we find a dozen of them that would be volunteer to come in, you know, work an extra day or whatever and work in the jail for a couple of days as a position, an SSO position where they're not in contact with the inmates. Nothing is not on the table. Everything's on the table.
Well, we will do anything. Okay. What about, all the employees that were at the board meetings, what, a month or two ago that were talking about their raises and so forth? What about talking to some of those folks, whatever departments they may work in? I don't know what departments they worked in, but putting the offer out to them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're talking about not being able to, you know, to afford to be able to working for the county. Well, maybe this is another opportunity for them to branch out into a different department, you know, move on up, if you will, if that's what they desire, but also to be able to earn additional income.
Right. And so, you know, even if a full-time employee at the county that, you know, wants to take a 12-hour shift, I mean, that's 12 hours of overtime, whatever, nothing's off the table. We will do, you know, again, number one priority for everybody is get that jail.
Well, think outside the box. You got to do it every time.
Well, with that, what we're going to do is go off to our break.
Mm-hmm.
And time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
You know.
Up in the hills of Northern California, we believe America is the home of the brave. What we got is earned by working it and handed out for free. We stand for the flag and pledge our allegiance for the last of a dying breed. Last of a dying breed. Where, at least that's what it seems. Politicians in the big old cities are running everything. Our way of life may be simple, and it's not for everyone.
Hi, this is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply, located at the intersection of Dersh, Turn Creek, and Airport Road. We are your one-stop shop for everything in your yard. We have all the small rental equipment, like the stand-on mini skid steers to get you through those walk-through gates, or Beretto trenchers on tracks are quick and easy to operate, and the popular vibroplates for compaction of pathways or prepping for under artificial turf. Make your job easy with the powered wheelbarrow on tracks. And of course, we have all the products to make your yard the envy of the neighborhood, including all the soils, sands, gravels, sod, pavers, retaining wall blocks, and multiple size trucks to deliver with no minimum, making your delivery the most cost-effective way to get your job done. So whatever your project, big or small, come check out Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Churn Creek, and Airport Road. Find us on the web at laukslandscapesupply.com or give us a call at 530-378-2220. Lauk's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
American Ironworks, specializing in custom fabrication from designer gates, decorative railings, handmade furnishings to giant works of art. With over 20 years of experience in Northern California, American Ironworks provides the highest quality of craftsmanship for your home or commercial space. American Ironworks also offers hand-sketched and 3D graphic designs to help bring your concept to reality. Visit our website and social media at American Ironworks or call 530-949-0710, 530-949-0710.
Authority Property Management, committed to providing service-oriented solutions to owners and landlords, offering full-time management services which covers everything from screening tenants to rent collection to final walkthrough inspections when tenants move out. Authority Property Management oversees single-family homes, apartments, condominiums, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial properties. Rental pricing, available properties, and a quick and easy-to-fill-out application can be found online at authoritypm.com.
Carjacking old lady at a red light. Pull a gun on the owner of a liquor store. You think it's cool, act a fool if you like. Cuss out a cop, spit in his face. Stomp on the flag and light it up. Yeah, you think it's tough.
Oh, yeah. Sally Lou, thank you, darling. Good song. Got a lot to get to in this segment, and we're going to start off with something new. We are going to be basically talking about a town hall, and this town hall is something, a segment that a lot of the conservative programs here are going to be having so that everybody gets brought up to date on what's going on in your community, in your county. I mean, the real story, what's really going on. And then we, of course, have Chris Kelstrom with us, supervisor for District 5 in Shasta County. And he will go ahead, once we're done with this, he will go ahead and he will comment on these things. So with that, we're going to play this. Katie, you're going to have to hold for a bit, hon. And let's roll it.
Katie sounds a lot like Jason Aldean.
Yeah. There we go.
Good day. This is your Shasta Lake Town Hall News Brief. We have 5 briefs to inform you on today. Without further ado, let's get right into it. The group Save Gateway Committee has ended its months-long recall effort against Gateway School Board members Lindsay and Elias Haynes. The controversial board members had come under fire after their vote to oust District Superintendent Jim Harrell shortly after taking office as one of their stated reasons. In announcing their decision to discontinue the recall petition, the group cited the short timeline left to gather signatures, with only about 10 days remaining until the deadline to submit over 2,000 signatures. They will now focus on efforts supporting qualified candidates in the upcoming November board elections. One Gateway parent emphasized the need for effective leadership and oversight in the embattled district going forwards. Next, developers K2 Development and Redding Rancheria Tribe recently secured $24 million in state funding for a major downtown Shasta Lake project. The planned $50 million development called Cascade Village will span both sides of Shasta Dam Boulevard and add 49 new housing units plus commercial space. Supporters say Cascade Village will finally give Shasta Lake a true downtown while honoring local history. However, the Winnemem2 tribe has criticized the project, pointing out the historical ties to the land prior to dam construction. Not all have welcomed the coming changes. Shifting focus, a new analysis of vote discrepancies in California's 2022 Senate primary have raised credible concerns over potential election fraud. Comparing partial and full-term contests featuring nearly identical candidates, 7 contenders mysteriously lost over 1 million votes between them. Yet, current Senator Alex Padilla only saw a negligible difference of 15,000 votes between the twin races. Experts have called this highly improbable statistically, while some minor voter confusion could account for modest variances. Losing 41% of the votes defies logic and demands investigation. Faith in our electoral system depends on variable integrity, regardless of party or outcome. Locally, the Shasta County Board of Education recently debated censoring member Arthur Gorman over alleged harassment of a transgender Gateway Unified parent. While declining to censor, the board did affirm that the professional conduct standards apply to them. The situation sparked heated debate as the community weighed in on the issues of rights and responsibilities. Finally, some Shasta County residents have requested independent oversight of the upcoming recall signature validation process. They cite past irregularities within the Register of Voters office as justification, with options including separate verification or monitoring. This comes as the deadline nears for petitions to recall Lindsay and Elias Hayes from the Gateway Board. Ensuring accurate signature counts is critical, particularly when given the narrow margins involved. But above all, transparent and lawful electoral procedures must be elevated over partisan policies. This concludes our local update. Please subscribe to Town Hall News at 420 Truth Seeker on X to receive more community coverage and commentary. We thank you for listening and look forward to our next edition.
All righty. Well, I think that that was a job well done. I think that's something that we need to be doing on all the conservative programs, even on Free Fire Radio once in a while. Anyway, we're here with Chris Kellstrom. We do have Katie on the line. Katie, what say you?
Hi. First of all, I want to thank Chris for the work that he's doing with the jail, and it's obvious that his past experiences and knowledge is helping him to have that out-of-the-box thinking that can lead us to definitely the success with that big project. And then the next thing that I wanted to say is just talk about what happened with my husband, Arthur Gorman, on the SCOE board in regards to that. He was not censured. First of all, none of the board members actually saw the interaction that was in question, and it was mostly hearsay. But from Arthur's perspective, he got out of his seat that day to walk over to Bobby Simpson and thank him for his public comments and gave him some advice that, you know, basically that politics can be hard, and that he felt like he comported himself in a way that was, you know, something to be proud of. Other people got involved, started calling Arthur names, He did use his gender assigned to him at birth because Arthur believes that no one was born wrong and that God does not make a mistake. And he has that conviction, so he uses the correct pronouns when addressing people, and it is not out of disrespect. But there was a lot of things that happened during that board meeting that got everything kind of convoluted over what Arthur posts and doesn't post online. The latest fling at him is that he lied in the board meeting. He did not lie. His SCOE email stands as a way to contact him on that page, since that is one of the pages that he mans. And it is not the email address that is used to create that account, or it's not a political campaign account. So that is a huge distinction that he was trying to make during the board meeting that was hard for him to do, considering he was being attacked by six other people. And then I would also like to say that, I'm proud of my husband, and he did a great job talking about the true issues that are facing Shasta County right now and our children. So thanks for this time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Katie. Yeah, that was great. Thank you. Chris, so on what you've heard with the town hall news, and if you want to comment on what Katie had to say or whatever, trips your trigger, buddy.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I mean, one thing about the school boards is we have gotten some patriots on those school boards, so, kudos to all of them for stepping up to the plate.
And we're not done.
No, and they're truly making a difference, and, it's great. We've got two down there in the Anderson School Board that, are just fantastic and finally watching out for the kids. We've got a new guy. I don't know him yet. He was appointed, but everything he sure sounded good when he was speaking his case, and I think he's going to be great too. And once the three of them are all on board, I mean they can make some definite changes. So kudos to them, kudos to Arthur, kudos to the Haineses. I mean, stepped up to the plate. They're making a difference. Obviously, they're making a difference because everybody's attacking them.
That's right. They're over the target.
That shows you that, and that's like our board. I mean, it's like the more they attack, it's kind of like, well, apparently, must be doing the right thing. So, kudos to all of them. So
absolutely.
And they're going to have an election, I think, in November for the open space there and on the school board in Gateway. So, if they get back to having a majority, they'll be able to get some other stuff done there too. So, things are changing. I mean, people, I think COVID really changed a lot of people and got them to step forward.
Kind of
like, my government just can't step on me and take away my rights. We can't do that. My government can't shut down schools and send the kids home. And then, force kids to get vaccinations or wear masks or whatever. And when they went after the kids, I think a lot of the mama bears are like, no, I'll put up with a lot. My own self, but not my kid.
Right.
So that's why we're seeing the school boards. I mean, even down to water boards, the Happy Valley Water Board, I went out there not too long ago and watched a meeting, and it was just heartwarming because it was in such disarray. I mean, it was, oh my gosh, it was a mess. It was, the past director was working all this phantom overtime, and the secretary had gone from $40,000 a year to $80,000 a year. The old board just kind of gave him free rein. I mean, it was a mess. And then all of a sudden, we're in a drought. A couple of years ago, it's drought. Everything's getting cut. They don't know they're going to run out of water. They don't know if they have any money to buy water. I mean, everything was just a nightmare.
Wow.
And I started going to the Happy Valley Water meetings, and then they had a water users group, kind of, so to speak, members of the community would go and meet separately, and in that meeting now all five members of the board, or four members of the board, one just resigned, so they have to appoint another one, but four members on that board are all people that were in that meeting, that used to go in the meeting outside the board and meet at the community center, and now they're all sitting on the board, they're running things, they've got a new director. I mean, everything's just like totally turned around. It's going great out there, and it's just heartwarming to sit in the back of that board meeting and look up there and see all these people that I used to meet with at the community center, and they all, four of them, stepped up to the plate, took over, and now they're running the board, and everything's going smooth, so they've got the people's best interest at heart, and things are going great. They just lowered the price of water. I mean, they've got a full allocation. I mean, everything's going awesome, so It's nice. It's nice to see, and more people need to do that. More people need to step forward. I went to Shingletown on Thursday, and I get some lady in the crowd that just moved down here from Portland a few years back, and you know she wants me to have a committee on every single issue there is, and bring in all these people, and I put up with it for a while, and after about 5 minutes, it's like, lady, I didn't come up here to talk to you, you know, and the way this is going, you're not going to vote for me anyways, and I'm about done, you know, I'm about done with you. So finally, I got a little irritated, and I said, "Oh, so you're telling me Portland's great? Everything's wrong. Nothing's wrong in Portland. You have run Portland now, and there ain't a single problem. Is that what you're telling me?" I said, "Because I've seen videos, and that's not what it looks like to me." And I got a little irritated, you know. And then I said, "If you think I'm going to bring Portland values down here and run Shingletown like Portland is, you got another thing coming. Next question, you know." And then she came back for more. She came back for more, and I'm like, "Okay, you know." And at this point, the gloves are off. I'm no longer, you know, and. So, I ended up handing her my card. I really have reservations handing you my card. I'm not sure if I want to talk to you again, but, you know, here's my card, whatever. But by then, she had realized that, okay, you're not going to browbeat me. You're not browbeating me. It's just not going to happen. I mean, you can try it, but you're not going to get anywhere. So, yeah, so kudos to everybody who stepped up to the water boards, the school boards, the whole bit. And, again, the fact that you're being attacked tells you you're doing the right thing.
That's right.
Well, and the rest of the nation is really looking at Shasta County. We've been on several calls with literally thousands of people. And, in fact, the last one we were on, I think there was like 8,000 people. There was five of us that spoke, and then there was 325 just on the call. And the thing about some of the comments were, well, you know, getting rid of the machine isn't the end all. It may not be the end all, but, you know, it certainly put a dent in the armor of Gavin Newsom, the spawn of Satan.
Yep.
Because we've had, he is acting like we had just neutered his prized bull, as is Kathy Darling Allen, our RLV officer. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's somebody, she went down to Sacramento, they're using her figures with this new bill, AB 969, they're using her figures on it. On what the cost would be of Hand County, which are erroneous, mm-hmm. to say the least. So I think we're really making a difference. And, folks, a lot of that has to do with guys like Chris Kellstrom.
Oh, absolutely.
They get in there and it's,
want questions answered because they want to know, but also their constituency wants to know.
Right.
They want to know what the hell is going on.
Well, we got guys that are one of us. See,
yeah,
that's the main
exactly.
thing. I mean, we don't have an elite. We don't have elitists in there.
Right.
You guys all speak your mind. You're not afraid. It's sort of like, hey, you know. We're tired of the BS.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're just going to keep going. Is there something else that you want to bring to light that you've seen happen lately? What's your thoughts, for example, on what's going on with the Zog Fire money? If you want to go into that,
That obviously, it's the community of Igo and Ono did not, in my opinion, get. Not even close to their fair share. I mean, they were almost ignored, and it was like it just. From the outside looking in looking at the figures, it was almost like, I mean, it was just like handing out candy to all the favorite organizations around.
Right.
And it's like, to me, the biggest slap in the face to me was there was I think $85,000. There was 19 volunteer fire districts that each got $5,000 apiece.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're giving a volunteer fire department
$5,000
out of a $55 million settlement.
Right.
You know, when these guys, I mean, you know, they're all struggling to get volunteers. They're all struggling for equipment. They're all struggling to make ends meet, and they get $5,000. You know, and Haven Humane, who was not taking animals from them, they did, you know, get $700,000, I think.
Bella Vista
Farms. Yeah, Bella Vista Farms got $500,000.
Yeah.
And so far, everybody I've heard from Igo Ono, and Bella Vista Farms is pretty close out there. I mean, it's way at the end of Gas Point on the way out there.
Yep.
And pretty much everybody said the same thing. Hey, we have nothing against Bella Vista Farms. We're not bad men, but they didn't take animals. They didn't do anything during the Zog Fire. So why are they getting $500,000?
Right.
You know, meantime, the Ono Grange, they're trying to rebuild it, and, you know, they got nothing for that. They're doing fundraisers to get the funds to rebuild the Ono Grange. We got a $55 million settlement. We couldn't have given a couple hundred grand to rebuild the Ono Grange. I mean, the meeting place out there. So, there needed to be some oversight. There needed to be some community involvement. I mean, in my opinion, it needed to be, you know, hey, what do you guys need? Who was, you know, we went out there to Jim Gibson's,
Memorial
Service,
And, you know, I'm looking at those hills, and I mean, they're just devastated. They're scarred.
Yeah.
It's horrible. And it's like, and we send all this money to the Children's Legacy Center. It's like
$7 million. Anyway, we have a caller on the line.
Yeah.
Talking about, a leader in the community and a guy we all love. yep. who actually really does have stones.
Jesse
Lane, how are you, buddy? What's going on?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Hey, so I was calling. I kind of hear some listeners and things like that. And I hear Chris talking. And Chris, thank you for always stepping up and being willing to push back, because that's all my comment really is today. Is we need to get to the point where we're done explaining ourselves. We're done. We're done trying to get the other side to see where we're at. For a long time we've said, Democrats and liberals and whatever. It's not. It's communist is what we're going against.
Exactly.
Yep.
And, to be honest, I'm done being politically correct. I've held back a lot, and at this point I don't care. We just got to be done. We can't give two craps what people think say anymore.
Yep. Yeah. Kind of ironic when you say that.
and we need to stop having to explain ourselves to them.
That's right.
We're going to say what we're going to say, and that's going to be it. You don't like it? Tough. Move on.
Yep.
Like the lady from Portland, like Chris was just talking about. Get out of here then. Don't come down here and try to change this into the Bay Area or Portland.
Yeah.
You want it like it was in Bay Area and Portland? Stay where you're at.
That's right.
Right on, brother.
So, that we all got to get to the point where we don't care anymore. What these people say and do, we don't care. Because obviously, like Chris said, you're not going to be one of my supporters. You're not here to help the community. You're here to break down the community and turn it into what you want it to.
There you
go. And we're done.
Yeah, there's no meeting in the middle anymore, Jesse. And thank you for all you guys do. You're the man, Jesse. You're the man.
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitled them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and institute new government. Are we there yet?
We are beyond there.
We passed there.
Well done. Well, thank you, Jesse. We appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks, awesome, Jesse.
Guys. Have a great one, guys.
See you soon, pal.
Yeah, that's that reminds me of the term limits. One of the things I campaigned on was term limits. So, I said that I would push term limits, and I got them, we got them on the next ballot that the voters, and so I turned the power over to we the people, where it should always be anyways.
That's right.
And now we the people get to decide whether we want term limits or not. And, it's funny, you get the same dozen, 15, I won't use Jesse's term, but whatever.
What term?
Yeah, exactly. That get up there and they tried their best to browbeat us. And I mean, 5-6 hours of it every single board meeting or whatever.
But you know what's really impressive is that they have a vast world of knowledge about every single issue that comes before the board.
Yeah.
It just blows me away how they are so frickin' smart and they know exactly what you should be doing. Why didn't they get their happy asses out there and run for board of supervisors then?
Well, when I put the term limits, so it was my thing. So I bring it up and I talk about it on the board, what's going to be term limits. You guys can vote for them. If you like them, vote, no or yes. And if you don't like them, vote no, whatever. But it's up to you. I've got half a dozen that have to go on. I don't like term limits. The institutional is required. You guys are all idiots. And that, on and on and on. It's
yep.
like... Then vote no.
Then vote no.
Just vote no. I don't need to. We don't need to hear. Just go vote no. If you don't like them, vote no. If you like them, vote yes. You don't need to tell me how you're going to vote a month from now. Oh my gosh, it's so frustrating.
Yep. Yes, they do. They need to. They need to validate.
Oh, I know.
Everything.
Well, in their minds, they are the smartest people in the room.
That's
right. You need to hear what they're saying because you're too stupid to decide for yourself what to do. So you need to hear their opinion and you need to do what they tell you to do because. Yeah, thanks. Vote no.
Well, and the other thing, too, is then they get up there and chew you guys out for all the time and the board meeting taking so long. Well, if they sat their butts down and shut up,
exactly.
The board meeting would go a heck of a lot faster.
Exactly.
And
that's
why I'm sitting in the back of the room going, shut up then. Yeah, just sit down and shut up.
And you're complaining, well, you have all these department heads here, and it's costing this much money. And it's like, and it's now what your 3 minutes just cost us.
Yeah.
Your 3 minutes just cost, what, $50? I mean, maybe you could have saved the county $50 and just wrote your thoughts down. I don't know.
There you go.
So frustrating, yeah. But it is what it is. And it's like, I would never want, you know, I believe in the Constitution 100%. You have your First Amendment rights.
Yep,
you
absolutely.
Have the right to readdress your grievances with your government. So by all means, but heard you the first time. You know, I wrote it down. You don't like me. Got it. I'll remember it. You don't have to keep reminding me.
But yeah, they do.
And a lot of it's just so ridiculous. I mean, you know, I remember one of the gals in their little blue Kevin Cry shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Recall Kevin Cry stood up and said, I don't want a constitutional sheriff.
I know.
Give me a communist any day.
Yeah.
How about the other one said you shouldn't wear a flag?
Oh, man. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this is going to be fun because we, on podcasts, when we do those, we're a little freer with colorful metaphors.
Yeah.
We don't get in trouble for
that. The FCC doesn't slap our
hands.
No.
Yeah. In fact, I think what we're going to do is probably, it'd be really fun to have a soiree.
Soiree.
A soiree. Well, we'll get to this with a soiree. It'll be a soiree. Maybe throw a few bottles of booze on the table.
Okay. Half empty.
When are we doing this podcast?
In about 15 minutes.
You'll be invited, that's for sure. I'd love to get it to where, I mean, you know, I know you real well. I've known you for a long time, and I know that you speak your mind. You've got a heart of gold. You know, you stand up for the people.
Absolutely.
I think the most important thing is that we have to have people elected who understand that this is what they are really public servants. I want you to comment on that. And the other thing is, too, that I know that you really, 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 this wasn't something that you really wanted to jump in and do. And I think because you did it and you went out of your comfort zone, I think it makes you a better statesman, not a politician. And there is a difference. So what are your comments on that?
Well, yeah, that kind of reminded me. One of my favorite parts of the campaign, we were having a debate up in Shingletown. And one of the later on guys, you know, that made a comment, he gets the microphone. And he says, in today's political environment, the way everything's, you know, separated and what contentious, he says, why would either of you two idiots do this? And I'm like, I'll take that one, you know. And so I grabbed the microphone and I looked him right in the eye and I said, because you didn't step forward and do it yourself. I said, I'm not doing this for me. I said, I'm doing this for all of you. I said, I won't want to be here. I said, I'm not a politician. This is not what I planned on doing. I said, but the right people weren't stepping up the plate in my mind, and I didn't like the way things are going. I said, so because nobody else is doing it, that's why I'm doing this. I said, had you done it, I wouldn't have to. I said, but you didn't step up to the plate. And then I told him, I said, you know, when people come up to me, and again, this is during the campaign, they say, hey, good luck. I'm rooting for you. I hope you win. I said, all of that means the world to me, and I really appreciate it. But the ones that walk up to me and look me in the eye and say, thank you. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for stepping up. I said, they get it. They understand. I'm not doing this for me. I said, I'm doing this for all of you. And then after the debate was over, this guy walks over to me and he holds his hand out and he goes, thank you for doing this. And shakes my hand. It was like, you get it. You know, it was awesome. So yeah, it was one of my favorite parts. But yeah, that's the thing. I'm not doing this for me. So we had an issue in Cottonwood here just recently. I know we're close to the end of the time, but there were some great, good-hearted, solid people that had wanted this project and was getting the funding for it and stuff, but the entire town was pretty much against it. 90% of the town was against it. So anyways, the one of the people that were for it had came up to me at this meeting where, you know, the torches were still lit and the pitchforks were still out, and she's convincing me that, you know, hey, this is why it's a good project. This is what we need to do. And I told her, I said, Sarah, you don't need to convince me. My opinion is the least valuable in this entire room. What I think and what I want to do doesn't matter. My job is to represent all these people. You need to go convince all of them that this is a good project. And once they all agree that it's a good project, then I will support it. I said, but my opinion makes nothing. I'm supposed to represent them. My opinion doesn't matter. It's what they want me to do is what I'm going to do, you know, so. That's how I look at things.
There you go.
You know, thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
You know, and I think that I think we need to support people who are going to support us and do the will of the people.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've got that here in Shasta County. We've been blessed that way. And Hey, prayers with you, buddy. Amen. And thanks for everything you do. And Mr. Wynn, I think the time has come.
For 51.
So let's get it done.
Amen.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? It's not our bill. We have no say. You don't serve us. You serve LA. The time has come for 51.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.